Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here to talk today with Pete Smith. And Pete joins us to talk about the Browns and the Know Your Foe episode for this week. And it just seems like we had a Know Your Foe episode a couple of weeks ago with Jake Burns. And that went real well. But Pete, we've had on before. He's also very good. And we're going to talk a little bit about the first Browns game. So first, Pete, how you doing?
I'm good. It's as we just talked before we started recording, it's just an unusual season from just in general in terms of the NFL and obviously particularly with these two teams.
Upside down division. I'm not really surprised about where the Steelers are at this point in the season. No. I kind of expected a little bit of decline from them. Cincinnati, I did expect to take a step forward. And I think we still don't know who the Bengals are right now. Yeah. They've beaten a lot of bad teams. They haven't done as well versus good teams, except for the big win in Baltimore. And then the Browns and Ravens, I certainly expected to compete for the lead. I guess you probably did too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you came out with the schedule, and you're sitting here going, you know, these two games are going to not only decide the division, but potentially, I don't know about home field, but certainly in that realm where we're sitting here looking at like positioning in terms of the postseason rather than, you know, obviously the Ravens are sort of in the catbird seat for the division right now, but and the Browns are on the edges of playoff viability. So, you know, the Ravens aren't nearly as comfortable as they would like to be, and the Browns are obviously nowhere near where they want to be.
Yeah, that's well put. I mean, obviously the Ravens, in a lot of ways, just had the Steelers on and guest on, and he, you know, it's very similar to the Steelers at 11-0 last year. They were a team with a lot of problems, despite a gaudy record. The Ravens have overcome a lot of their problems with some heroic finishes. I wouldn't say it's catching up to them at this point. I would say that you know, you can expect some fluctuation in luck as the season goes along, and missing the 2-point conversion in the last game against Pittsburgh certainly falls into that category.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Ravens have benefited from a number of situations. I mean, the Detroit Lions game stands out most notably, and even though they fell short with the Steelers game, like for as bad as that game was, where you let the Steelers hang around for 3.5 quarters and they finally, mm-hmm. you know, took advantage. You know, the Ravens, the game was there for them. It wasn't as if the Steelers made some great play. You know, and I know people want to give TJ Watt an unearthly amount of credit for the play he made. The Ravens just missed a play that was there. It's really that simple. And it's not like, it's not some commentary on Lamar Jackson is, you know, this is the downfall of Lamar Jackson, or, you know, this is where the Ravens are going. They missed a play by like a half an inch. And mm-hmm. if they didn't, you know, the conversation is entirely different.
Right. I agree. It was one of those things. Mathematically, I agree with the decision. I think from an overtime perspective, it made sense. It just didn't work out. And it was good to see them scheme a play that would work. And then for Lamar to take the extra step forward, for him not to be able to adjust to what Watt was doing was also kind of unfortunate on that play. So anyway, sad to see. Let's talk Browns. First of all, how has the injury report changed since the first meeting? Obviously, the Browns have had the benefit of the bye week here.
Well, you know, that's the thing. Like, you're coming to the bye week and having it as late in the year as they did, it felt like it was going to be a huge respite. And then they come back Monday and you know, things seem pretty good. And then Tuesday, you know, we find out that David Njoku's on the COVID list. And, ooh, you know, he is vaccinated. But using history as a guide, the Browns had this happen earlier in the year where they had Nick Chubb and Demetri Felton end up on the COVID list on a Tuesday. And you need that back-to-back 24-hour negative test. Mm-hmm. It's not impossible, but it's damn near in terms of being able – I mean, it's just the nature of the beast. So you have a player who has historically done very well against the Ravens come out. You're losing Harrison Bryant from the last game with a high ankle sprain where he was the second leading receiver on the team. And all of a sudden, like, you feel pretty good from a defensive standpoint. But offensively, you're starting to ask yourself, where are the points going to come from? Anthony Schwartz is still dealing with a concussion from one of the, what I would say is the worst hit of the NFL season this year. with what was in a car accident with neither side slowing down in New England, and one of the hits that's like ultimately going to be legislated out of the game, you know, whenever they basically do away with kickoff. He's still dealing with that. So, you know, the players they were hoping to get back or continue to take a step forward are not. The one sort of saving grace for them is Kareem Hunt is healthier than he was in the first game. And he's another player who has done really, really well in this matchup, particularly going back to last year in that game, you know, the shootout. Oh, yeah. Kareem Hunt was a huge, huge factor. So that's the one thing that's sort of going in their favor, in addition to just sort of overall getting a little healthier.
Now, you mentioned the two tight ends out with Bryan and Njoku, and that was something in the first game. Boy, it was really prevalent in the offense, was the amount of 12 and 13 personnel we saw. And in particular, the Browns lined up heavy all the time. On all of Chubb's runs were all 12 and 13, by the way. All of the 4-13s and 4-12s that he ran. And the Ravens, actually, the Browns really were very varied in how they did that. They lined him up in line. They lined him up split. They lined him up in the backfield. They did a little bit of everything to try and get it sprung, and nothing really worked. You know, obviously, Chubb ran, 2 yards a carry, 8 for 16, 8 for 17, whatever it was in that first game. What do you expect them to do different in order to get Nick Chubb started in this game?
Well, I think part of it is the bye week. And, you know, in that game, I think, you know, the Ravens were the hammer and the Browns were on the nail in terms of that sort of matchup where, you know, Wyatt Teller did not play particularly well. The Ravens did a really good – and this is a game where the Ravens' best defensive lineman didn't play.
Yeah, Calais Campbell's out.
Yeah, Calais Campbell, 35 years old, who's playing the best football of his life in his 30s. You know, basically a Hall of Fame resume in his 30s compared to what was a pretty – I don't want to say bad, but average, you know, decade of his 20s, which is remarkable. Mm-hmm. He's been unbelievable. So to not have him and then play as well as they did with Wyatt Teller not playing particularly well. Jedrick Wills struggled. He's dealing with an ankle, has been all year. That's been a problem. And Blake Hance, you know, God bless him, he can't play dead. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's a really difficult situation. So, you know, will the Browns come out? They have not acknowledged who's going to be the right tackle, which may be simply gamesmanship. They may use more jumbo, particularly with the lack of tight ends. In previous weeks, they've used their backup guard, Michael Dunn, as a tight end. Maybe they get a little more creative with trying to do that. One, because Blake Hance isn't really a tackle, he's just sort of there. That can sort of protect him a little bit if they want to put him on the, you know, if they want to put a guy like a jumbo tight end on the right and maybe insulate him a little bit. That may be an option, but given the fact that the Browns are going to be down tight ends, you know, part of them may have to simply embrace it and spread them out a little bit and hope with that between the Humphrey injury and some of those things that they at least can force them to be a little more honest.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Even from the first game is that when they were running against the base defense and you know, this 12 and 13 forces the Ravens into base. And you know, not like they wouldn't like to play base. They probably prefer it in some ways. But when they did that, it's more difficult, obviously, to run against that. But the Browns had a lot of success, and it's really the only offensive split that really looked good for the Browns was how they passed against the base defense. 9.9 yards per throw or per, you know, attempt. Exceptional there. I you know, watched the Browns boards and I saw some complaints about the Browns giving up on the run too early. And I would say just the opposite. I'd say they didn't give up on it early enough. They should have been passing the whole time as soon as they saw the Ravens in base.
I agree. And you know, people then go and watch this Patriots Buffalo Bills game and they go, well, you should just slam your head in the wall enough and eventually it will work. And you can make that case. The Patriots scored 14 points. It's not as if they ran the Bills, you know, off the field. And I get the weather element, but, you know, the Browns lost 16 to 10. I mean, 14 still wasn't going to be enough. And maybe there's some idea behind that, but it's not who Kevin Stefanski is as a coach. And you know, he's sort of got this Bruce Lee mindset in terms of coaching, which I actually really appreciate. In this NFL, you have guys like Kyle Shanahan, who's a great coach because he's so good at scheming a player open and getting guys touches. So like Debo Samuel or George Kittle or whoever it is, he's mm-hmm. very good at a team wants to take those guys away and he will get them the ball somehow. And that's sort of a very common idea, is you're going to find a way, you know, come hell or high water, to get your dudes the ball. And that can backfire because teams can take that away. Kevin Stefanski takes the opposite approach, where he's going to, in this case, he's going to try to set himself up in a situation where he uses 12 and 13 personnel to try to get an advantage with the running game. But if the Ravens in this case are going to give him, or are going to say, you have to pass the ball to beat us, he's going to say, okay, we're going to pass the ball to beat you. This is where my advantage is. He's going to find that, you know, the path of least resistance. And, you know, the criticism of the Browns offense is when that works, and particularly last year, it looked like a symphony orchestra sort of working, and that you had these guys like Rashard Higgins and guys that, you know, nobody outside of this division even knows who they are. Mm-hmm. And then when it doesn't work, as has been the case this year, or even in certain situations last year, you come out and you go, well, why the hell are the Browns throwing the ball this many times to guys who are not named Odell Beckham, as was the thing? And that's, you know, that's part of that disconnect where, you know, Odell Beckham is a guy, and this is not a criticism of him, but he's just sort of one of these guys who goes, well, if I'm this guy, I need this many targets, I'm going to eventually figure it out and make plays. And the Browns just don't do that. That is a point where people can criticize it, but that's just sort of their philosophy. So that's sort of how they approach it.
Yeah, I think it's the right philosophy to have. Harbaugh has actually been addressing that this week in a little mini Beckham situation the Ravens have. And I hope it doesn't become anything. But there's been speculation that Rashad Bateman got a new agent this week and his targets have been down. And, you know, is he unhappy about the number of targets already as a, you know, rookie? That would be really bad. You know, he's also had some issues with drops personally with, you know, this year. So it's not like he's earned a inordinate amount of trust. He's been good, but it's not like he's earned an inordinate amount of trust. And I really don't want to have that happen here. But Harbaugh short-circuited to a degree. He said this week, and you know, very correctly, is you chase targets in the NFL, you're doing the wrong thing. You know, you need to take what the defense gives you. And I'm paraphrasing now, but effectively, you know, that means going to whoever's not covered. Sometimes your best receivers are covered and they don't get targeted.
Sure. I think what you end up with is you're taking sort of a bigger scope look at this, and you're saying, how many yards am I going to get out of 15 targets? You know, taking names off the sheet.
Right.
Can I get 150 yards out of 15 targets, or do I get 100 by sort of now putting it all on one guy? And I think if you sort of, you know, you can sort of look at this across the league. If you just sort of look at box scores and you look at these things and you're looking at guys get like 16 targets and end up with 8 grabs for like, you know, let's say 100 yards and a touchdown.
60 yards, yeah.
Yeah, and you look at that and you go, well, he had a great game. That's not an efficient way to play football. So, you know, and the Browns look at this and they go, well, they spread it around. So, like, you know, they'll have a game where David Njoku gets targeted 5 times. And granted, I would like him to see the ball more than he has. But then you sort of add it up and you're like, well, these 15 targets produced 150 yards, and you may not love the guys who are getting the ball in those situations, but overall you're moving the ball better. And, you know, to me, I really like Kevin Stefanski as a coach going forward, but John Harbaugh is a fantastic coach in sort of understanding the big picture. And I don't know how much of that is because he comes at it from being a special teams coach background, but just having the ability to sort of separate, you know, guys and sort of overall trends and embracing those has made it so they get more out of, you know, what at times has been average players. And particularly right. This year, when you're a team that is, you know, 20 players on injured reserve, or, you know, maybe 50 at this point for them, it just feels that way.
Yeah.
And they're still finding ways to produce and create ways to win. That is sort of embracing that mentality, as opposed to trying to say, well, because player X is hurt, now I'm going to force a million targets. In this case, you mentioned Bateman. It just doesn't work that way. And defensive teams are too smart for that. You have to, well, I wouldn't say have to, because clearly there are teams who don't, but it's prudent for you to go, they're not covering this guy very well. There's an opportunity. Let's just take it and run with it. And if it really succeeds, you end up winning the game doing that, or at least putting yourself in the best chance to win.
Yeah, I agree. And we're clearly cut from the same cloth, because yards per target is the most important receiving stat.
Huge.
It's the first thing I look at. And, you know, anyway, we don't have to talk about it anymore. Let's go back to that first game in terms of Baker in particular, because the Ravens, one of the things they did in this game is they gave Baker a lot of ample time and space opportunities. And they didn't do much in the way of deception. When they did deceive, they were very good at it. But 20 out of 40 ample time and space opportunities. Now, just to give you a little background, that's a three-second pocket with the ability to step into the throat, which is a very extreme definition of having a lot of time to throw, meaning a lot of people use a 2.5 second standard. They don't have a step into the throw category, but that's the way I count it. And those 20 plays, he completed 8 of 18. He had 2 sacks on those plays, but it was worse because the results were really barbelled. He had 3 big plays and only 5 middle-class plays, were like 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 yards. What was it about Baker that was kind of not connecting in that first game in terms of the long time in the pocket and not able to connect?
I looked at the first game and I say it was a tale of two halves. Baker Mayfield was really good in the first half in terms of getting the ball to where it needed to be and putting guys in position to succeed. The Donovan Peoples-Jones drop and that first drive is heartbreaking. Ultimately, they have to settle for a field goal that they miss. In that game, getting 7 points on that first drive clearly would have been enormous and sort of changed the dynamic of the game. So in the first half, things were going pretty well. Obviously, he had that ghastly fumble on what appeared to be a very good and potentially scoring screenplay. But just in terms of where the ball was going, in terms of getting it to where it needed to be and putting guys in position to succeed, it was good. Ultimately, the problem that has really sort of shown up and is with his injuries and everything has sort of gotten lost is his supporting cast is not helping him. And this goes back to last year and the Chiefs game in the playoffs, which was a nightmare in terms of the Chiefs basically said, you can't beat us in man coverage if we play man. And they were right. I mean, they were just right. They couldn't get open. And Jarvis Landry is historically a zone beater. And now he's a guy who doesn't beat man coverage with a knee injury that is clearly really bad, which hurting him. Donovan Peoples-Jones is a very talented young kid who has a bright future. He's just not there yet. And then you have the Odell Beckham situation, which now sort of took a guy who was hoping to be, we were hoping would be like a nice wide receiver 3, wide receiver 4. And then, he becomes the de facto number 1 receiver. And all of a sudden, Marlon Humphrey is in his face. And it's just not a good situation for a player like that. He had the opportunity. He couldn't ultimately produce on it. He had some other plays like that. And then in the second half, I think the Ravens did a few things to sort of change that. But it also came down to the fact that I think in part because of the lack of success in the first half, that there was a little bit more pressing. There was a little bit more trying to sort of force the issue. And, you can call it a hero play. You can call it sort of trying to get plays back that they didn't make the first time in that sort of essence. And you get into that situation. I think both quarterbacks in this game, in that first game, ran into this where they're basically like, trying to score basically 20 points in one throw. And you ran into that thing. And ultimately, it took a bad situation and made it worse. So ultimately, I think Baker Mayfield was more than good enough to win in the first half. And the second half didn't do himself many favors. And the Ravens basically said, look, we can let him have time. Our pass rush will eventually get there. Your weapons are not good enough, and we're going to make you prove it. And that ultimately happened.
That does certainly jibe with a lot of the numbers. Certainly the Ravens got the Browns into a lot of third and long situations where they could get their rush dime on the field. 3 outside linebackers, not Calais Campbell, but it was Justin Matabike in that game, along with 6 defensive backs. And they're a lot better in pass defense when they get the inside linebackers off the field or get you guys may have the same issue in Cleveland. But anyway, it's Cleveland ended up getting only 12 yards on those 16 rush dime snaps, so only 0.8 yards per play on those. It really more than any other game, and I chart packages by play, obviously, but they played the base and they played this rush dime, this very extreme, pass prevention defense. They didn't play much in between. 91% of the snaps were one of those two, so it's very it's very odd. Do you see more focus on trying to get into third and manageable in this game after what we've seen in other weeks recently where the Ravens have had a lot of trouble with third and manageable, particularly against the Steelers?
Well, I think the only way the Browns can win, not just this game, but basically any game, is staying at a third and long. They just aren't good enough in terms of their dynamic skill positions where they can just go out and get third and 12. They just don't have those guys. They don't have, you know, you just look at the division. The Browns have the worst receivers in the AFC North by far. It's not even close to some of the other teams, whether it's the Steelers and the Bengals, who have an extraordinary amount of talent, but even the Ravens, who have players like a Marquise Brown, who I think is underrated, a player like Rashad Bateman, who's got some nice talent. And then obviously Mark Andrews is one of the best tight ends in football. You know, for all the things you can criticize about what the Ravens are doing, they have guys that can at least make those plays. Right now, the Browns don't. And I think what ultimately is going to happen, and not that it matters for this game, but, you know, come the offseason, you're going to see basically a huge amount of turnover in that position and reinvestment to get there. So, yes, third manageable is imperative for the Browns to be successful. They have to be able to put themselves in a situation where they aren't predictable. They can't put themselves in a situation where it is third down and going to pass. For that exact reason, not only do the Ravens excel in those dime package situations, Adafe Owe was really dangerous. Their other defensive end, you know, had his
Bowser.
Yep. Yeah, he was great. And then not only that, but now they feel absolutely zero fear in blitzing, particularly off the right side, because they just don't fear anything beating them down the field. If they get the ball out of Mayfield's hands faster, great. They're going to tackle it short. And if they don't, they get a sack, which is ultimately where this goes.
All right. Anything more to say about the offense in general? I mean, I think we covered a lot of material here. I kind of want to move on to the defense at this point. Give you a chance? No. Okay.
Yeah. No. The only thing I would say, keep an eye on, which I've been basically harping on and hoping for all season, and hopefully more healthy, and particularly with the issues they have, is seeing Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb on the field at the same time, and seeing Kareem Hunt split out. If you go back to the game last year, that was the pivotal point that changed the game. The Ravens' corners absolutely shut down the receivers in the first part of the game, that shootout on Monday Night Football. Mm-hmm. They start splitting out Kareem Hunt. He takes advantage of linebackers. Ultimately, they start having to put corners on him, which frees up everything else in the offense, and suddenly the receivers are able to produce, and the whole thing then becomes that back-and-forth shootout, and it becomes, you know, who's going to have the ball last. That's the one thing I would keep an eye on. Keeping that threat of having Chubb in the backfield, being able to do things, whether, you know, God forbid, a jet sweep with a guy like Kareem Hunt, throwing him the ball in space, forcing the opponent to try to tackle him, I think that is an area where they have upside to sort of change the game in the second matchup that they didn't have in the first one.
Okay. I mean, I think there's other upsides too, particularly Ravens' health at cornerback looks terrible right now. So,
well, yes,
Marlon Humphrey being out is very severe. But more than that, I mean, it looks like Tavon Young, you know, he only played 7 snaps this last week, and he might be their best cornerback right now. So it's a shame if they can't have any of their regular guys. Moving over to the defensive side, obviously Myles Garrett and Clowney, I thought, both played very well in that first game. The Ravens have enormous tackle problems that got worse with the loss of Patrick McCary. Let me think about if Patrick McCary was playing. I think he was, right, against the Browns in the first game at right tackle?
Yes.
Okay. So he won't be this week. He gave TJ Watt a little bit of a fight in the first half, very short arm guy, but the replacement is a very long arm guy who has played terribly. And that's Tyree Phillips. What do you see the Browns doing differently, if anything, to rush the passer?
Well, I mean, I don't see them changing too much. And if you go to the first game, their plan worked. I mean, there were plays that didn't pay off, but they are a team that wants to live in cover 3 1/4. They want, and like every other team, the best thing you can do against Lamar Jackson is take away the receivers and have everybody else at least in a position where they can see where Lamar Jackson is. And if he is going to break the pocket, then they can at least try to play assignments on football and corral him. When that doesn't happen, he's sort of left to run around, you know, in part because of the injuries and trying to do too much. He is now either throwing the ball into bad situations and you basically have to wait for him to do it, or he's sacking himself. And as somebody who watches Myles Garrett and how phenomenal he is, I wanted to strangle somebody watching how many times Lamar Jackson would just sort of run into TJ Watt in that game. Mm-hmm. and that type of thing. So, like, that's sort of the game plan is because the Ravens are so destroyed in terms of injuries, and Lamar Jackson is having to do, you know, he has to do it in a ton normally, but now he has to do even more, and it's not leading to productive results, and it's leading to plays that are really, you know, sort of gambles. And the Browns got the four interceptions, but the plays they didn't weren't good. Like the touchdown that, you know, they throw to Mark Andrews where he's wide open in the end zone. It was a coverage breakdown, but they got Lamar Jackson to go back like 20 yards and just sling it in the middle of the field. That's, you know, everybody go, well, Lamar Jackson's a phenomenal player. You know, John Harbaugh is going to look, this is not a good football play. It worked, but it's not a good football play. So to me, I think that's where we want to go.
Yeah, I would say he threw it to an open spot on the field. That part of it was good. Okay, the retreating 20 yards, no, you can't do that play after play. And, there was some of that against the Steelers as well. It didn't work out. But, they have put a ton on Lamar. You're absolutely right. I'm scared of it in terms of his risk of getting injured the remainder of this year. And basically, I think the Ravens need to get back to at least a split offense between the pistol and the sidecar, because pistol specifically makes Lamar an outside threat where he then is running to the sideline on a lot of his design run plays or on the mesh point plays where he has the read option. If that's the case, he takes a lot less injury risk with him being the threat in the middle of the field, which can be more profitable because defenses run themselves out of position all the time against the Ravens. I don't like it because I think it exposes him to some of the bigger hits, and the offensive line is terrible. The running backs are not making anybody fear the run game at all, which means every eye is on Lamar play after play, and that it's got to be creating more injury risk.
Well, the question I have for you in this situation is, because of the way the injuries happened and because you're a mesh offense, mm-hmm. how much did this team lose by the fact that they basically had to bring in guys off the street and say, we're running this? And you're an offense where you're asking the quarterback to carry out these mesh fakes while looking at the defense, and they don't have those reps with Devontae Freeman. Are they sort of limited in how much they can really do that just by virtue of the circumstance of the season? Or are we to a point in the season and in week 14 where they've been around long enough and they can do more of it?
I mean, I think they're probably getting to those two, Murray and Freeman, are probably getting to a point where they're more comfortable with the mesh. But the problem is they're not fooling anybody. I mean, they're the fourth and 13th worst in rush yards over expectation. So at the point of the handoff, they're averaging, you know, 3/4 of a yard approximately between them, less than what the NFL expectation would be for those exact same circumstances. That's not going to cut it. And any defense that's seeing that is also saying, you know what, we're not worried about that. We're going to watch Lamar very carefully. We're going to mirror him. And our linebackers aren't taking extra read steps because we think play action is coming. It's not a formula for success. And the two young guys, most notably Tyson Williams, he was by far the Ravens' best back in the preseason. It looked like he would enter the season as a number one back with them getting these geriatric guys, Le'Veon Bell and Latavius Murray. I mean, you know, those guys were finished. Okay, very, very simple. Freeman has been better the last few weeks, but those guys were finished. And the thing that really bothered me about it is there's got to be something about the mesh point that Williams is not figuring out, because he's been a healthy scratch on a team that hardly has room for a healthy scratch right now at this point in the season with all the injuries they have.
Yeah, that's the thing is, I think what gets lost in this type of offense is, you know, teams practice that, you know, weeks and months just getting that right. Yeah. And then you lose your top backs, and you're just, you know, you're trying to figure it out. It's a difficult offense. You know, I know a lot of people are critical of the offensive coordinator there and what they're doing, but that's such an important part that it does limit what they're able to do. But, you know, between that and what the Browns have at that linebacker position, a player like JOK, who not only is he really fast, but he's really smart, and he's very good at reading his keys. And there are situations where he's being, you know, a lot of these guys who are super fast play too fast and they don't actually read it. And yep. JOK has done a really nice job of, you know, yeah, you have a guy. That, you know, Patrick Queen drives me nuts. But yeah, you know, you have a guy, JOK, who's been really patient and willing to wait till Lamar Jackson gets a couple steps, and he's fast enough, and he takes good enough angles where he can then go track it down, which, you know, the Raven, you know, there isn't a really good answer for that for the Ravens right now and what that is. And unless the Ravens can sort of, you know, get their offensive line to the second level and sort or tight end or whoever and sort of get him before he can get going, that's a really difficult situation, because I think Lamar, you know, in the same way that, you know, the Browns can't simulate Lamar Jackson's athleticism in practice, I don't think the Ravens can simulate JOK's athleticism. And I think it genuinely surprised Lamar Jackson just how quick he was. And look, part of this, I think Lamar Jackson is not 100%. He may be 95%, but he's not 100% in terms of just his speed and explosiveness. It's just nature of the game. And I do think it was a little surprising for him to suddenly be running down the field, and he has this, you know, rookie right next to him running with him.
JOK definitely drafted as a Jackson beater, and I think he's lived up to the point. And you guys, jealous of you that you got a guy who's producing in his first year. Queen looks like he might be coming around, but JOK definitely a positive player right away. Give me a little bit of backdrop on the secondary for the Browns, and then we'll need to wrap this up.
Well, so, you know, as I mentioned, they want to live in quarters. They want to play cover three. And then typically on third down, they'll mix in cover one and they'll blitz, especially if it's third and long, to try to get the ball out of the quarterback's hands fast. Any number of teams do that. That's sort of the in vogue approach with that. What the Browns did, and I think has been really good, Ronnie Harrison was somebody I thought was going to be great this year. He was pretty damn good last year, and then he was just surrounded with more talent, and he's been another disaster. However, both against the Lions and then against the Ravens, they've made him essentially a quasi linebacker, and it plays to his strengths way better. And I think that will continue because it's just the way this matchup works. And he's been really good at that sort of outside backer spot where he's able to come down with some athleticism and play the ball. John Johnson, I think, is, you know, it's been a bumpy ride, but he's a really good safety, and he's able to have that patience and read the middle of the field. They have Grant Delpit, who's coming along. And again, if they can play coverage the way they have, they can allow themselves to be patient and allow Lamar Jackson to make a mistake, which obviously happened. Each safety had an interception in that first matchup. You know, you have, you know, Denzel Ward, who's playing at a phenomenal level. He's finally playing, you know, fourth overall pick corner. You have a rookie in Greg Newsome who's really impressive in terms of, I don't know if there's any one thing he does at a special level, but he does everything pretty well. And that becomes a really big challenge for particularly tackling. There were some situations over the course of that game and then in general where, you know, they get an underneath route in a situation where last year the Browns would have given it up on third, let's say third and 12. They complete a 7-yard pass and the receiver easily would have gotten the 5 yards and then some. And Greg Newsome's a good enough player where he can at least short circuit that before it starts. And that's been a big challenge for some of these teams. And now they're having to throw even further down the field to ensure they get those plays, which, again, with all the issues that Lamar Jackson is facing right now, that's one more challenge that makes it more difficult for him to be successful.
I absolutely love Greg Newsome coming out of the draft. He's one of the players that looked one of the guys who could adapt to the NFL. And I think it'd be fair to say, you know, other rookie cornerbacks often have trouble. They can often have difficulty, but Newsome, at the very least, you can say he's adjusted well to the NFL. His skill set seems to work in that way at this level. It seemed to translate. So,
well, the thing I would point out is I think Greg Newsome's been great. I would point out that the rookie class this year at corner in general is playing at a historic level. Like, you don't get corner classes this good, whether you're looking at Surtain in Denver, some of these other corners that have stepped right in are playing a really high level. Like Greg Newsome, you could go, oh, he's a draft steal. But then you look at these other corners who have been picked, and they're all playing at a pretty high level.
Yeah. All right. How about picking one player on each side of the ball you think matches up really well against the Ravens that the Ravens need to be careful about or that you think can do some damage?
Well, I think Kareem Hunt is the X factor in this game on offense. He's been a guy who's given them problems. His ability to move all over the formation is troubling for them. They can't just sit in base. They can't just do what they want to do. They now have to account for a guy who can cause them problems. And defensively, Jadeveon Clowney, Jadeveon Clowney is not as good as Myles Garrett. However, Jadeveon Clowney is better at defending an offense like the Ravens than Jadeveon Clowney. He feathers an extremely high level in terms of dealing with like reads and options where you have to at least make sure where the ball is. Miles Garrett's more of a bull in a china shop type guy where he's going to come downhill, and he's been, you know, victimized as a result because he wants to come downhill. He doesn't really read well in that regard. But Jadeveon Clowney, he's been everything the Browns have hoped for and more. But particularly in that game, he put on sort of a master class of how to play that edge position against an offense like the Ravens run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he definitely a great edge setter. And the Ravens appreciated Suggs all the years for being the combination guy. Clowney's, you know, may have had a Hall of Fame career derailed by injury. And he could still come back and be, you know, Calais Campbell in his 30s, be very effective. I could see that from his play style. That he could last a long time. It's really, I think, comes down to just how durable is he going to be to stay on the field. But great run defender. Pete, thanks so much for coming on. First of all, I had you on before last year. We really loved it. Great that we could connect again this year. Tell people where they can find your work.
Yeah, I mean, I always love coming on and talking with you. It's always a good time. You can find me on Twitter at @_PeteSmith_. You can find my work and the work we do at Browns Digest at si.com/NFL/Browns and you know, all the stuff that goes on there. So yeah, you can find us at anything Sports Illustrated and the Browns team site.
All right. Outstanding. Folks out there, make sure you get your divisional follows taken care of. The Browns have a very analytic fan base and a group of analysts that's really good to follow. Pete's definitely in that category, so make sure you take care of him on Twitter. Other folks out there, if you're looking to do a 25 years historical episode with me, hit me up Twitter. Narrow idea that we can go deep on in about 20 to 25 minutes. I'll get back to you right away on it, and DMs are open, so please hit me up on that. Pete, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.